Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here today with Adante and Isabella. And we're going to talk about the latest offering from the Star Trek franchise, available by streaming only through CBS All Access, which is the first bone that I would probably pick, but I'll try to avoid that. Everybody's talking about how annoying it is that you have to pay for another streaming service just to watch the new Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite comedy series, Honest Trailers, they called it, you have to boldly stream where no one has streamed before.
I had literally never heard of CBS before this, so.
Yeah. It is positively crazy. I mean, so like, you know, between this and, you know, young Sheldon and David Boreanaz is a soldier or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely going to keep my subscription for All Access.
Well, I am. The only other show that I'm excited about is a sitcom called Life in Pieces that's mm-hmm. on CBS. That the first season is available on Netflix. And yeah. I watched it, and they were like, I generally don't laugh out loud, especially when I'm watching TV by myself, because I just don't, and I'll always find things funny when I don't have like the social cues to know that I'm supposed to be laughing. But I will laugh at that show, like giggle ferociously at least once an episode. And it's super funny and it's really cute, and it's a sitcom and it doesn't have a laugh track. So they've already got me sold like on that. So I'm catching up on that, which I feel like I'm getting more of my money worth because I have another show to watch.
Yeah. So, yep. I'm already planning on going ahead and canceling my CBS All Access account as soon as the last episode of Discovery airs in November picking it up. Only, you know, picking up only when it comes back again.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting to think that I'm pretty sure, as you know, Isabel said, that she didn't even know they had a streaming service specifically for CBS. So I'm sure it's not an accident that they're positioning what is one of the top franchises that they have on the network to bring in money to their streaming service, because they realize with everything else that's out there that they're losing people. So
Except it became like the second most parodied show behind like Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, great plan.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at least I canceled our HBO subscription when Game of Thrones ended. And I might pick it up for Westworld again. But like, even I used to think HBO was great because they had lots of movie content, and that slipped too. Like, they don't have the movies available anymore, and they just, you know, you have to have a good game now. You know, to keep your streaming subscriptions, you're gonna have to have a good game. So, first piece of commentary, CBS, if you want to keep your streaming subs, you're gonna need to.
You're going to need to go ahead and like keep that content coming out. There's a reason why Netflix is still king of the hill, and that's because they're coming out with Defenders. They're coming out with Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage. All of that stuff alone is enough to keep people interested.
Yeah.
Not to mention they've got Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, and like every other show that you could possibly want to watch is on there.
Yeah.
With the exception of Buffy and Firefly, because why would you ever cancel those, Netflix?
Except all the CBS shows, because now they have their own streaming service.
Right. Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why split the profits with Netflix when you can split it with anybody else, or you don't have to split it with anybody?
Yep.
Anyways, I think we're going off on too much of a tangent about CBS.
We can circle back around now, away from streaming, and to give the ubiquitous spoiler warning, we're going to talk about the first two episodes of Discovery in this show. At length and in great detail. So just be forewarned that if you haven't watched the show, that we will be spoiling all of the plot points with our criticism and our discussion. So let's start with first impressions. Isabella, let's start with you. What was your first impression of the show?
Are we really doing Klingons again? And horribly? Yes. This is happening. Oh God, it's happening. That was my impression.
Blow by blow. To be fair,
like the first 5 minutes, I was like, "Yes, this is what I wanted," and then Klingons happened.
Yeah, because it opens with the first officer and the captain down on the planet doing the reconnaissance, a rescue mission for the species that was going to become extinct because their water had been compromised. Yeah, that was a cool scene, except the science of it. So we finish, you know, she does, so she walks in the line and makes the Starfleet, you know, symbol. Oh my God, whatever.
I was so on board with it. just in that scene alone, I was just like, I am on board, Michelle Yeoh. I will follow you into a black hole. Like, let's do this.
I was like, aren't you guys supposed to be not... like don't make contact, but then you like stamp your symbol on the planet.
Right, on the planet. Well, you know, and it was a
only for so long, you know,
sand, but yeah, but Chris's thing was you know, okay, so here's a sandstorm that they can't actually find them in, but they can see their footprints in the sand.
Here's my thing. They're leaving their footprints in the sand.
In the sand.
And there's a sandstorm.
Yes, in a sandstorm. Yes.
Like as soon as the commercials happened right after that thing, where I was just like, yes, this is great. I was like, wait a second, there was a sandstorm.
Right, yes. Like the logic of it was pretty cool.
How are they going to go ahead and leave and do that, the whole thing, while it's still there?
Yeah.
Like, yep. No.
Yeah.
Grammar is hard sometimes. Sorry, people.
That's okay. Yeah, it was a cute and sort of, you know, emotion driven opening, and I liked that. I was okay with that. The way it established the characters and their dynamic.
Well, yeah, you know exactly who the captain and Michael, the first officer, are like in those first 5 minutes.
Oh yeah,
straight away.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I mean, my first impressions of the show in the first 5 minutes was super great. It was I was up here in the first 5 minutes.
Exactly.
And then over the course of the next episodes, it was just like boop, 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 boop. And then something happened in the second episode where I was just like, meow.
The first 5 minutes is the show that they showed that we were going to have.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what the expectations were, that was the kind of show it was going to be. And then it just wasn't that.
No.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be that. Which
and it's not going to be that. Like the first two episodes have almost nothing to do with what the rest of the series seems to be.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's like, you know, if I step back and take my first impressions after having watched both episodes, that's the thing that has me the most off kilter about it. And what was funny is, like I said, I was talking with Chris about it today, and he's like, well, I'm excited because it's not what I thought it was going to be, because I thought it was just going to be another Star Trek, and it's not. It's got, you know, a different thing to it, and I'm really excited, and you're really cautious. Like, this is an interesting like dynamic between the two of us, where it's like it's put me off, where I'm like, I'm not really so sure about this, and Chris is all in. So it's funny.
Well, because what I feel they did is that they like took our expectations and then took it out to the woods and shot it and be like, you get this instead. I feel betrayed.
I don't feel like they took our expectations out to the woods and shot them. I think they just kind of like
politely, it's late, I'm being
they politely like led them behind the chemical shed and sent them to a farm upstate. You know, it was a much more humane way of doing it. Like I'm not too doom and gloom about this. I mean, I think it's going to be fine. I think it's going to be good, but I'm not sure that this is going to be the A+ slam dunk that they were hoping it was going to be.
That they're banking on.
Yeah. I mean, Next Generation, this is not. Sure. This is not Encounter at Farpoint, because that episode is absolutely terrible.
Yes.
The first
the first season of Next Generation is pretty rough.
The first two seasons are kind of rough.
Yeah, the second season kind of pulls it together. By the third season, they actually had wheels on it. And that's when they used to take time to, like, make shows that, like, needed to figure themselves out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, CBS is hoping that this is going to be, you know, again, A-plus straight out the gate. But I don't know that I'm that excited about it. Like, I'm going to go ahead and watch it.
Yeah.
Because I am part of this website and I'm part of this panel. And I don't think that if I was not doing this podcast, double negatives are great, folks. God, I was about to pull into a triple negative. Let me try to rephrase this. If I wasn't doing this podcast, I would not be watching this show. I would have been like, oh, okay, cool. I saw the first two episodes and I'm going to cancel my free week subscription to CBS All Access right now.
You got a week. I got 2 days. It said 30. It said 2 days free.
Oh man. Mine said a week for free.
I think because I went with the no commercials version. Because having streamed episodes on CBS's free streaming, when, you know, they had kind of like a Hulu setup for a while where you could watch episodes, and I was watching one of the seasons of The Good Wife. It was, you had to watch it within a certain number of days, and they had certain episodes that you could only watch like 2 days after it aired. And those were free, and so there were commercials, and there were lots of commercials. There were like 10 commercials. And so I was like, I'm not even messing around. Like, I don't have the time to watch 10 commercials in a subscription service. Even if it said it was limited, I'm like, I don't know. Because even with, like, I got the no subscriptions, I still get commercials in Life in Pieces for CBS shows, but I still get commercials. And they keep showing the same NCIS with Scott Bakula, and I'm like, you can't do that accent and stop it. Because it's terrible. So
that's the entire... that's the entire like summary of NCIS New Orleans. Is that what it is?
New Orleans, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because he starts out like in the over, because I've seen it like, 5 or 6 times now, because that's how many episodes I watch. And so he starts out like really thick in like a southern drawl, and then it's just Scott Bakula like 15 seconds later. And I was like, really? Okay.
They convince you you're in New Orleans just by having beignets and gumbo all the time.
Yeah, I was just like, no. Anyway, totally off topic. But yeah, I'm going to try not to rant about the streaming service anymore. So Dante, so you were into it too at the beginning and then kind of like faded as the episodes continued.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the biggest issue I think we all had, because I put, as we were discussing and we're talking and prepping the episode, I put up a picture for everybody to see of like the evolution of the Klingons.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, because I'm having a really hard time with the Klingon aesthetic.
Yeah.
The Klingon everything, really.
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, like
it had to be Wrath of Khan that they redid when they, you know, rebooted the movie. But to do the Klingons and make them look again, like, I kept thinking how reptilian they looked. Like, that was my whole thing, is that they just look like reptiles.
So here's my thing with the Klingons. I'm trying my best to be optimistic and open-minded about this. The one positive that I can absolutely say is that the Klingons in this iteration of Star Trek finally, at least to me, stopped looking like humans with lobsters attached to their foreheads.
Yeah, that's true.
And they finally look like legit aliens at this point.
Yeah. They're
actually legit aliens.
Right. Yeah, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's why it bothers me so much, is that they do really have like an othered look now.
Yeah.
Where they didn't so much before.
Yeah, that's the thing with everything in Star Trek. I mean, it started out with Shatner, and, you know, people literally just painted green, and other people.
Like, and dogs and costumes.
Yeah, dogs yeah. and costumes. And the correct me if I'm wrong, but like, you know, the earliest Klingons were basically just people with weird eyebrows and goatees yeah. and dressed in gold lamé. That was basically it.
There's a little like, because Roddenberry envisioned them like the next generation with the, you know.
With the ridge, yeah.
With the ridge that Worf has. But they didn't have the technology really to do it in an effective way during yeah. the original series, which is why, you know, Roddenberry was very involved with the next generation. That's why they look the way that they do. So to see it kind of, and then you have to think about the placement of where this is in relation to the others. So Star Trek Discovery comes after Enterprise and before the original series.
Yeah, which is
in the non-movie universe.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah,
which is weird because everything looks so much further advanced.
So much further advanced. I mean, they're, you know, their clothes, the ships, just everything looks. And then part of that is just the special effects. But you know, it really that is really kind of its placement and its so okay. that's its placement in the story. So that was part of the reason why I think I bristled. Because I had to stop the episode and look up to see where it was, because that was the yeah. understanding I had had before, was it came there. But then I'm like, why do they look so fundamentally different?
That was the thing that really I couldn't wrap my head around, especially with the uniforms. Like, because I thought, like, I'm thinking to myself, like, these uniforms are lit as hell, and then I'm looking at this, I'm like, wait a second, this is supposed to be 5 years before Kirk? Like, what happens, like, when yeah. they go from this sharp-looking stuff into...
pajamas.
You know, it's basically scrubs.
Yeah, scrubs. And, like, because if you look at, like, the full... You don't see a lot of full-length shots in the original series, but they actually had, like, the pants tucked into their boots. Mm-hmm. Just always cracks me up because they like ballooned out at the top. Like, what were you thinking? Even for the 60s, that was bad. But yeah, like the bad polyester and all that. So it is like, it's hard to kind of keep the continuity between them and keep it in its place and time, because it is aesthetically so different. So.
Yeah. Right. So that's why I have trouble like placing it like in the timeline. It's because now you've like dramatically
change
how they look.
Mm-hmm. I think that if I was more of a Star Trek geek, like, don't get me wrong, I love Star Trek, it's great, I'm not as slavish to the timeline as some of the other like more hardcore fans or some of the more purist people are, so like it doesn't bother me all that much. I can pretty much separate them as different entities and different shows that happened at different points in time and at different places in the galaxy for every Star Trek universe. Like, and
very forgiving.
And that's enough for me.
Right.
Like, I don't care about the nitty gritty details. I don't care about like, oh, well, you know, like, well, the Delta Quadrant was actually established here and Kirk actually did this, which did the thing, and it contradicts whatever happened in Discovery. Like, I don't care. Like, just let me go ahead and watch it.
Yeah.
You know, well, let me evaluate it on its own merits.
Yeah, I can hang with that too. And I kind of step back and I did some research when I was posing the questions for you guys as we were discussing today. And I pulled up a couple of articles with the showrunners talking about it. And essentially their idea is that because the Klingons were so fractured as a race, that they would have developed in completely different environments, and so naturally there would be like a difference in appearance between them. So I mean, they have like at least some sort of rationale. I think it's really just that everybody needs to put their stamp on the Klingons, because they do, you know, keep coming back to them as the main antagonists in the storyline, so they have to make them individual for each series, and that bugs me. Like, then I think there should be continuity then, because I feel like it's just to make them look sexier for each iteration.
As much as the Klingon is sexy.
Well, yeah.
I don't have as much trouble with the timeline, I guess, but like trying to think of all these shows happening in the same like
right
storyline.
Mm-hmm.
like kind of messes me with a little bit. Like, yeah. Like if I think of this as like an alternate history, maybe.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But, yeah. Well, I mean, I even felt that way watching Enterprise because Enterprise was supposed to be the first one and, you know, the original, and it was supposed to be kind of rough. And they did do in Enterprise the one thing that I always had wanted them to do on Next Generation, the original series, and they never did, which was they were always, you know, worried about life support going out. And I was always about, what about your false gravity? Like, you're on a spaceship.
Yeah.
There is no natural gravity. Well. And so they actually did that. Well, right. But, you know, only if, you know, in certain circumstances. But, you know, like the gravity went out in the first episode. And they never did it again. I'm always like, oh, like in the middle of a fight, everybody just starts flying around because the gravity went out. That would be awesome.
But that would be amazing.
Yes.
The effects of that are way too complicated.
Yes, exactly. Like what it would do to the story is just huge. And, you know, special effects and all that kind of stuff, you know, make it prohibitive, I'm sure. But it's just one of those things that always stuck with me.
Okay, so I wanted to bring up another point with the Klingons. Well, two more points. One really stupid one, and one that Izzy and I have a lot of words about. The first, the really stupid one, T'Kuvma the Unforgettable. Like, really, that is the best you can do.
Yeah, that's not very threatening, is it?
It's just not,
like, we can't forget terrible. You.
It's like, we can't forget you. Like, great. Like, I don't forget you, but like,
it's like awesome. The first identity someone comes up with when they're developing their identity in an online environment and they're making character for themselves. And that's what they would call themselves.
Mm-hmm. I'm sitting there just like, you know, like that's about as good as like Fiery Ice Dragon Princess 42069 or something like that. like that is like the first AIM screen name of the Star Trek universe, T'Kuvma the Unforgettable.
Exactly.
So anyways, Izzy and I both had, I think, similar feelings about the next one, which is Spacism.
Spacism, which is space racism.
We're going to put a little trademark on that one for you guys.
So
I didn't come up with it. This is them.
So I started thinking about it when we were introduced to whatever the heck his name was, the albino, the albino Klingon.
I don't even know anymore.
We'll call him the Torchbearer because that's what he calls. Yeah. That's what he gets called a lot. The Torchbearer. And I'm sitting there like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, and they're all shunning him, like, shun the non-believer because he's, you know, because he's white, and he's like, he's not like white, like a white person. He's like albino. And I got to thinking to myself, like, have we ever seen a white Klingon before? And the overwhelming response was like, maybe the general from Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, like kind of, but otherwise not really. And we're thinking to ourselves, is this a statement? Like, is this a statement that they're saying that, you know, that this entire race of people is basically made up of colored folk, and they are warlike, they're threatening to the stability of the universe, they're constantly antagonizing and constantly killing and pillaging and doing all that other fun stuff.
Well, that, and they're also characterized as a super emotional, super violent, like irrational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's
looking to go ahead and take more of the pie that doesn't belong to them. Yeah, and Izzy also discovered another point that that we talked about earlier today. That's that there have been several white people who have been basically, as I understand it, put into blackface so that they can be Klingons.
Right.
Like, that's even more problematic for me.
Yep. Right, but it's okay because they're aliens. They're not really black people.
No,
have just severely coded them.
Right.
As people of color.
Well, and you know, and there's arguments against that and analysis as well of the orcs in
Lord of the Rings
and the goblins as well, where the race parallels it parallels like real race profiles.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's just kind of a standard thing that has ended up happening.
Yeah, so
yeah,
but it's also it's super prevalent in space-based shows.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and yeah, and
other the aliens.
Yep.
As basically people of color.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, you know, like, I mean, most famously, I think was Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, where the Trade Federation folks were basically saddled with these terrible Chinese accents. Do you all remember that?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, basically what we're talking about is kind of old hat as far as science fiction at large is concerned, mm-hmm. but this is 2017.
Yeah.
We were supposed to be woke at this point.
Yeah, we're supposed to be woke.
Yeah. I mean, and sure, like a lot of Star Trek fans are still, you know, like my father's age, or you know, like born in the late 40s, early 50s, and maybe they're not really hip to this idea yet, but if you're trying to go ahead and attract a younger audience, who's not as firmly entrenched as someone like I am, maybe you should be thinking about these things when you are making these decisions with your characters.
Yeah.
Just because it's always been this way does not necessarily mean that it has to continue to be this way.
Right. Well, you know, and it goes back to, it really was an issue that Roddenberry wanted to discuss. He really did want to discuss race issues, and then it's just been diluted throughout the continuation of the franchise, where it was so very evident in some of the, especially if you look at the third season, when he knew the show was canceled, and there was like, you know, he's like, look, they actually had the episode where like there was like black on one side of the face and white on the other. I mean, like, talk about like hitting you over the head with a metaphor.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, but both were white actors. I'm pretty sure. Both of them were white actors, but you know, that really was something that he wanted to discuss, and it's just kind of gotten lost in this othering that we're seeing happen, where they're made aliens and they're made so othered. And I do think that that's part of my discomfort with this, was looking at the faces, because there were so many shots of like a close up of the unforgettable guy who I can't remember his name. That like they like went really tight over the skin, and to show, and I guess from what I read, that part of what they're doing is that these Klingons have no hair.
Yeah,
where hair was such a prevalent part of like the other Klingon representations.
Yeah.
So
that's really weird. I didn't even
like the eyebrows,
the
goatees, yeah, and the long hair.
Worf through the Next Generation grow his hair long because he's getting more in touch with his Klingon ancestry, and that was one of the things, is they have that longer hair and the longer beards.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting.
It's interesting that's been an aesthetic choice that they made, and I don't. There was just something about that. Because it was a close-up on the skin that looked so black, and like I said, it looked like so reptilian and so weird.
Yeah.
And their heads are oddly shaped because there's no hair on the back of them. Like, if you catch it, there's a couple of pictures I looked at with the heads where they're kind of, like, elongated in the back.
Yeah.
So they really were looking like alien, like Alien, the movie Alien. So.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they can barely move their mouths and anything. Yeah. Like,
I also felt that was really awkward, like, practically.
Like the way the nose noses were like all the way like out.
You can tell that they can barely move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In those giant outfits and like the face makeup, like you can, like there were certain shots where like they were speaking, and I was like, you can't really move your mouth.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it should be far enough along now with the technology that these should be, you know, the best masks you can get out there for them. Anyway,
when you layer like a ton of latex on your face, or whatever they're doing is just going to be like,
I don't want to just talk about Klingons, and we are on a bit of a time crunch for this one. So let us just say we are aware of some problems and hope that maybe they address some of the things that have kind of come up with the Klingons. Maybe let's unlikely, but maybe they will.
Yeah.
I'm going to run down some of the notes we had here. So the uniforms, The makeup is great. The set and the lighting, the cinematography, the special effects, all of that was outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, it looks, it looks like a 2010s era movie is basically what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. It has a movie look to it, which I thought was great. Which made me feel a little better about paying the subscription fee to see it. The story is, it was great. I loved the story. I loved the evolution. I even liked the kind of idea that they're pulling in Kalis and like the kind of religious zealots. I thought was kind of cool for the Klingons for that part of the story.
Oh yeah. I thought it was great. I mean, just like, what did you think about the dialogue, folks? I mean, like, especially like some of Michael's like exposition heavy dialogue. I was just like, oh God, like, please just find a less clunky way.
So awkward.
Yeah.
There were a few times where I was like trying, they seemed like they were trying a little too hard to make her.
Yeah.
They were trying a little too hard, period. Yeah. And go ahead.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to cut you off, but I just wanted to go ahead and like jump on that. Like, they tried so hard to go ahead and make her like, she's the strong female character. She's relatable. Yeah. Look at how plucky and
I was
happy
so
she is.
Off put. Like, I just could, and I shouldn't be, because she should be everything that I want, but like they were working so hard at it, and they were working so hard and forcing the relationship between her and the captain, that I didn't feel it. Like, I didn't feel the connection between them. And if they have these 7 years worth of history between them, and she's really kind of humanized her.
Yeah.
Either of you feel that way about them?
I felt it more in the first 5 minutes than I did in the rest of it.
Right. Like, I didn't see it. Like, that's why, like, you, when you said it started out and I was right there, like, I'm loving these guys. And then that, whatever that sense of connection between them, I didn't see it kind of come back again.
No, I mean, it was just, I think it didn't help that Michael was, I felt she's very inconsistent in the way that she's being written. You know, like, I mean, they're trying to go ahead and make her a human with a Vulcan upbringing, and like, and I'm not sure that the writers really know which way they want to go with her.
Yeah.
Because it seems like there's one scene where she's, you know, hyper Spock-like and, you know, and very, you know, matter-of-factly and, you know, proper Vulcanese, and then there's the next part where she literally like does the Vulcan force pinch and she commits an act of mutiny and she's acting in a heat of passion. I'm just
right.
Like, what is happening? Yep. You know, and then the next scene she's breaking out of her prison cell in a very calm, cold, and calculated way. I'm like you need to go ahead and choose a gear and stay in that lane, all right?
Or at least if you're gonna do a mix, do the mix in a believable way.
I mean,
like, because she just ping-pongs back and forth instead of, like, I don't believe that there's conflict there if she's just like, I'm acting very Vulcan now and then I'm very emotional.
Which way I want to go with this, like, opposed to showing the character development in a way so you see why she's making the irrational decision she makes when she makes the irrational decision, and she uses the logic when she uses the logic. Because I loved the scene where she broke out of the
South. Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to outlogic the computer. I was so excited.
Yeah, I thought that was great. It was well written. It was well conceived. It was beautiful. Like, it was great. But then it's like,
it just feels, it feels too, I don't know. There is just that certain something that seems to be missing. And and it's one of those things that you can't put your finger on it, but you know when it's not there,
right?
And you know, like,
yeah, exactly. I whatever the connection is, and that like energy between people, it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I hate to use sports ball analogies here, but like, this is what in sports balls they call like the intangibles,
right?
You know, like
the X factor.
Yeah, this is like, you know, like, you know, some people just have that thing, and Michael doesn't have it, which is all the more disappointing, because I thought this show was supposed to be about Michelle Yeoh. Like, she's
so
literally the reason, like, 110% of the reason why I signed up. And then, like, I added another 20% when I found out that Doug Jones was on the show. And then I was like, oh, okay, cool. Look at that. They're gonna have a woman of color as the first officer. Great. But, like, Michelle Yeoh, like, I am here for, like, you know, like, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Klingon. This is gonna be great. And then they totally 86 her at the end. Like, what?
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Because it said special guest, and I was like, oh, she's going to die in the second episode.
That's the thing. It's like, I saw special guest Michelle Yeoh, and I thought, like, oh, okay, so she's just going to be, like, a recurring character. This is going to be the story about
how I still think she'll come back.
Yeah, I thought this is the story about how Michael gets the ship.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no.
Yeah, I think she's dead, but I think that she'll be in flashback scenes in Michael's evolution.
Yeah. I mean,
backstory.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, hear me now, CBS. Like, hear me now. Like, give me another series with Michelle Yeoh. Like, I want to go ahead and see her, like, her character in her younger years. Like, that's all I want to see. Awesome. That is literally all I want to see. Just like her sit. Like you want to go ahead and put her in a rocking chair, going ahead and telling stories about the past. I don't care. I will watch it.
She could How I Met Your Mother her.
Oh, God, I would be so happy. Like. But how unnecessary was that death? Absolutely, how unnecessary was that?
They absolutely fridged her just to make Michael, feel things.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah,
just to make Michael feel responsible for everything. You know, not to mention that, you know, Michael probably already feels guilty about starting an intergalactic war when she didn't need to, and now she has to feel guilty about the fact that she killed the one reason why I was watching this show.
She killed the one reason I was watching the show.
And that's the thing. It's like Philippa Georgiou was such. She was fully realized. She was consistent. She was tough. She she had everything that I wanted in a Starfleet captain.
I didn't have that much feeling for her. I didn't get that.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. No, really. I thought she was great.
Yeah, I didn't connect to her. I didn't connect to either. I did in the first scene, like we're saying, like the opening. Mm-hmm. And which had been part of, I think that was part of what one of the, I stopped watching the previews because when I want to like something, I usually like sequester myself from it. So I don't see, you know, what's kind of coming. So I don't get any ideas in my head. So I'd only watch like one of the previews. And I remember seeing the scene and I remember seeing that. And when I watched it, that scene was the one that I connected to. And it never really, I never got that connection between their relationship and between them. And because of that, I felt like she, the captain just didn't hold for me either. So I was so disappointed because I was also looking forward to seeing her. So, but you know, we do know from, you know, the grapevine that the show had a really hard time of keeping people working on it and had a lot of story conflicts and a lot of that. So, From what I was reading, a lot of that it was cleared up, I guess, after they finished these first two. And now that they're launching into the actual Discovery part, maybe the consistency will get a little better because that was when the director and everything kind of solidified. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just like, I don't know what they're discovering, by the way.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's,
I have no idea.
Like they discovered Klingons?
Yeah, that's part of what I'm curious about, too, like, because it looks like it's a prison ship.
Mm-hmm. I think Discovery is the prison ship, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I think, but like, but
I don't know why.
that they're on some like mission to find something that nobody's ever seen before.
Right.
And they give us Klingons to start with.
Right.
hopefully
that's the end of the Klingons. Hopefully.
I feel like we're going to keep seeing this torchbearer guy pop up again and again and again and again, and it's just going to make me angry. Like, give me somebody new. Like, you want to go ahead and do something really great, like give me an updated Ferengi or something like that, you know. Give me a reinvention of Q.
Isabella brought the Borg up, although in the
first Borg, like give me the invention of the Borg queen, you know.
Oh my god.
Like, yeah, I was like, I know that she is such a hotly contentious figure inside of Star Trek lore, but like I love the Borg Queen. She's great. It absolutely makes sense. I don't care what you haters say. and if Star Trek Discovery discovers the Borg Queen, I will absolutely lose my mind. Absolutely. 100%.
That would be great. That would be cool. I would love to go back to the Borg. I always loved the Borg. That was always my favorite Next Generation. I mean, of course, because it's what the Next Generation became about.
Absolutely.
It was really the defining of them.
Not to mention it's the best movie.
It is the best movie. First Contact, the best movie. High five, virtual high five.
Virtual high five. There's my camera. Sorry, like my camera's over here on this monitor, but you're over there on that monitor.
So what did you guys think of what's his name? Sarek? Is that his name?
Saru.
Yeah.
Saru.
That's Spock's dad?
That's the chief science officer played by the one, the only Doug Jones.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah. That's not who she was asking about. I was asking about Spock's dad.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about Saru. My apologies.
Yeah, that was Sarek.
Saru had some good lines, though.
Yeah, Saru really did. I liked Saru. I thought he was his solid science officer. I thought he did a great job. His deliveries were good. His interactions with Michael were fantastic, too. So. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, his character is a little one-dimensional, but I'm sure that everything is going to flesh itself out. But his makeup is incredible. And he's delivering everything like primo, top notch.
Yeah, so, he was great. I really enjoyed him, and I was really glad to see that he's continuing. I'm not exactly sure how that works because she's on a prison ship, but I'm sure we'll get that explained to us. But they did give a lot of background of the two female characters and the Klingons, which I thought was really good in kind of like setting up. And you definitely don't see in Star Trek, usually you don't see a lot of kind of background at the beginning. So it was nice to have that part of why I think we didn't get so much of Saru. But I liked the Sarek actor. I thought he did a decent job. I mean, he's got some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So I think he did well with what he was given.
What's the actor's name? Now
I have IMDb pulled up.
I have seen him before. I think he's been on True Blood. That's mostly where I remember his face from.
James Frain, Frain. Oh, he's only in this episode.
Oh, really?
We don't see him again. Oh, yeah, he was in True Blood. He was a bad guy, a bad vampire. But yeah, it says only one episode, so that was pretty much it, I guess.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Because I think he pulled off the Vulcan, what?
What? Yeah, the countenance, the, like...
I thought you were... Yes. Okay, I thought you were, like, you. Disagreeing with me. the subtlety of the, the Vulcan, calm, collected, but he's still, no, but I messed up when I didn't tell you that I was proud of you and that you're grew up to be strong and all that. I really like that scene.
Yeah, I did too. That scene really kind of solidified her character, Michael's character. But like you said, with kind of the ping ponging back and forth between the emotion and the
knot, it's just too much.
It was too extreme. They wrote it too extreme. They made it too overly exaggerated. It just carried too much. So hopefully that'll thin out, and hopefully they'll get that.
I think they wanted to bring her to that extreme because she is supposed to be.
She acts out of passion and out of.
She is now going feeling. To more and more of her human side and less of her Vulcan Starfleet officer.
Her training, because it's training versus it's nature versus nurture,
right?
Her nature is still going to be human, and her nurturing or her upbringing was not. So, it'll be interesting to see. It's interesting to see that theme brought back again too, because of course that's what Spock and what Data deal with as well. It's nice to see it in a female character, especially a female of color. So it's cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's cool. So what are we thinking? Are we hopeful? Are we on the fence? Where is everybody with where we go from here?
Hashtag emoji shrug.
You can't hashtag an emoji.
Yes, I can. I just did. I think, oh God, like, I think I'm on board for at least like one, maybe two more episodes. I'm not hopeful that this is going to get any better, but I am intrigued enough to give it another shot.
Let's see where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm intrigued enough to keep watching to see what the heck they're going for.
To see what kind of footing they go for from this, because to have started with such a different story that it's continuing with, mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot of responsibility on storytelling and on character development to keep the engagement. And mm-hmm. there'll be a lot of really easy shortcuts that they could take that might alienate us even
right.
more.
So what I really wish they would have done was done like the flashback, like introduced us to her now and maybe done a flashback to all this.
Yeah.
Because
then I would know what I was in for.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
But
yeah, so you had to kind of set up.
They're just going chronologically, I guess, and there's not.
Yeah, it was really interesting because as I was watching the first two episodes, the series have always been named after the ships, and so they mm-hmm. were not on the Discovery. And so I was like, this is interesting. I'm kind of intrigued by the fact that it doesn't have the name of the ship, that the story isn't about, they're not on the ship.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that that meant it was going to be a show about multiple ships.
Oh.
And that's why Discovery.
I thought it was going to be like she was going to move on to be the captain of her own ship because
Well, I knew she was going to stay first officer because all the stuff I had read about it had said that she was going to be first officer. So I knew that much. But I thought that what was going to happen at the fallout of that fight was that they were going to piece together, the Klingons were going to take off because they had destroyed them. They were going to piece together the ships that they could, and then that was going to become, the story was going to be about those ships, kind of Battlestar-like, where mm-hmm. it's the limited ships that have been damaged are all kind of like trying to help each other out and figure out a way back to where they're going. Yeah. And that's what I thought the Discovery was going to be, what they found together as the ships together, not gotcha. That Discovery was the prison ship, which what an odd name for a prison ship. I'm really interested to see where that
goes. Yeah, that's...
Or a penalty ship or something. I mean, they probably don't call it prison at this point. In
I was about to say, yeah. I mean, evolution. They exactly call it like gulag or whatever. But
you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, I've remained fairly spoiler free about where this is going. I haven't been following the hype. I haven't been following previews. I haven't been following speculation. So I'm going into it with about as open as I can. So like, I'm here for the ride.
we'll see where it takes us.
After that first hill, I'm sitting there just like, eh, it could be good. I really hope that I'm proven wrong because this is the first Star Trek that we're seeing since what, 2005? The first televised Star Trek since 2005.
Since Enterprise, I guess.
Since Enterprise for a series. Since Enterprise, there've been the new movies, the J.J. Abrams universe.
Yeah.
Life-changing Sulu and, you know, Spock and Kirk characters, completely different storyline. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yes, this is the first television show that I can really appreciate as an adult. And I mean, I'm just like, okay.
Don't let me down.
Don't let me down. I've only been waiting 12 years for this. So yeah.
Good.
I guess that's all right.
Yeah. What do you think, Isabella? You feel a similar way? Yeah, already said. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And we're going to continue recording about it and talking about it. So if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, anything that came up for you while you were watching or listening to this episode, please let us know at thegeekembassy.com or catch us on Twitter at thegeekembassy. And we'd love to hear from you what your impressions of Discovery are, because this is big. This is big for Star Trek fans at the very least, and for science fiction kind of in general, kind of as a thing. Yep. Good. Absolutely. Well, thanks for listening, and until next time, get your Trek on.
Yeah. Trek yourself before you wreck yourself. Yes.